Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of the Tigers Minor League Report. I am your host, Chris Brown. Rogelio is going to come along in a little bit. He's still bowling at the moment. I'm not quite sure how long that'll be, but you're stuck with me for a good 10, 15 minutes probably. But yeah, another fun week in the Tigers Minor Leagues. A lot of fun stuff to talk about in general. We've got the Tigers coming up with three big wins in Cleveland. And really, once again, it's the young guys that are driving them, which is, it really makes the wins feel better, doesn't it? When it's the young guys, it makes you have hope for the future, which I haven't really felt since 2021. And even then, maybe that's a good reminder to pump the brakes a little bit. But yeah, it sure is fun to see Torkelson and Green and Carpenter driving this offense and leading to some wins. Hey, Aiden, thank you. Good evening to you, too. And then, of course, the big news from the minor league front is Parker Meadows getting called up after the game. Call him up, right? Some people have been asking for months and months and months, and it's finally happening. And I think it's good to maybe sometimes step back and talk about that as a nice a development win. Maybe we'll see. Time will tell how Parker Meadows works out in the big leagues. But there was a good 2-3 year period where it looked like he just wasn't going to make it at all. Right, like he was stalled out in West Michigan, not hitting for power, not really putting his speed on display. And it's the old adage, right? That development is not linear. Sometimes it takes time, particularly with guys like Parker Meadows, who are big and tall and rangy. It takes him a while to dial in that swing. And he appears to have done it, at least to the point where he's getting called up to the big leagues. And that's, like I said, it's a development win. It's maybe it comes up and it doesn't last long, but it's nice to see. So yeah, hello, Stan. Hello, Deadly Ninja Bees. He says, I like these. What are these called? Home runs. Yes. It is fun to have people hit home runs. Good luck to Eric Haas, says Michael Irman. That's another one. We try to talk about this a lot, but as fans, it's easy to get caught up with the guys who aren't performing, and it's easy to say, hey, get that guy off the team. And there's always that human element behind it that some of us consider at times, some of us don't. And the Tigers really they had a nice farewell to Eric Haas with their tweet and brought in Carson Kelly, former top prospect of the Cardinals. Eventually, and he got traded to Arizona in the era Goldschmidt deal? I think it was. But yeah, it's a bummer. One of the things we were talking about in the Discord, Spencer Torkelson has been as hot as anybody in baseball, and he had six home runs in a 7-game strip, which has only happened 8 times for the Tigers since the year 2000. And Eric Haas was one of the other players who did that. There were times when Eric Haas was carrying the offense, but this year it just wasn't working out for him. And there comes a point when you have to look at it and say, is Eric Haas a part of this team's future? And the answer is probably not. Despite, I think the pitchers like throwing to him, but catching is the hardest position in sports. You can't convince me otherwise. People play quarterback and say maybe their quarterbacks aren't crouching for 3 hours every day. But beyond that, and it's such a hard job, but you have to hit too. And he just wasn't. And so there it goes. But the Carson Kelly should be interesting. See what he can do over the next 5-6 weeks. And then, yeah, And one of the things that I've been curious about, we've talked about this before, is we're pretty sure that there was a catcher involved in the Eduardo Rodriguez deal. Nothing's ever really come out of it, but connecting the dots with Donnie Sands being down and Yuri for some reason, it made us think that there was a catcher involved. So who knows if this would have happened with Eric Haas, if it would have happened 3-4 weeks ago, if not for that trade deadline nonsense. But in any event, we're back here. We're talking Tigers. We're talking Tigers minor leagues. Again, I think, what is it? Torkelson's up to 22 home runs now. Didn't see that one coming. But I was looking at the data. It basically, since May 1st, so just throughout April, since May 1st, Torkelson has been a 120 WRC plus player, which is basically the borderline, the baseline you need to be an average first baseman in the big leagues. Obviously, the 120 WRC plus means you're 20% better than average as a hitter, but the defensive penalty is so bad for first baseman that to become like a two war player, you have to be 120. And he's been that since May 1st, which is great, right? That's the baseline. That's the player that I thought he would be, the Reese Hoskins type, the 120, 130 WRC plus. But since July 1st, that's getting closer to 140. And when you're talking about 140 WRC plus, you're talking about a top 20 hitter in baseball. And that's pretty exciting, right? That's what everybody was hoping for when they're looking at those baseball smart sliders. You go, it should be happening. And it's what those scouts, I had a scout tell me last year, he said he still thought Spencer Torkelson was going to hit 40 bombs in the big leagues. And that was in the midst of all his struggles last year. And so it's really gratifying to watch. As much as I've been critical of him and I've tried to be fair, but some people think I'm being way too negative. And I would like to hand out some Spencer Torkelson praise right now because he's really carrying the offense and it's fun to watch. And then we can't forget about Kerry Carpenter. What an awesome story. He just continues to be, was it 18 home runs for him now? Just remarkable. A 19th rounder. Raj had a cool stat back there about he has more hits than any other player taken after the 13th round in Detroit Tigers history. Something like that. He would know the exact detail. So that's been awesome. And then Riley Green just keeps going out there and it seems like he's having a rough game. You look down and he's 1-for-4 with a walk and a strikeout. He's hitting .304. And he makes a great diving catch in center field. Exciting core. And they're adding a fun piece to it. I don't know. Historically speaking, Parker Meadows, as we talked about, he was stagnating for a while there in West Michigan. And then when he got up to Erie at the beginning of last year, after about 2 weeks in West Michigan, he struggled for 5-6 weeks. And then he took off from like June 1st. And if you look at it this year, I had pulled up the stats. It's basically the same thing. This art, you filter it back to June 1st. From since June 1st, he's hitting .271. 17 doubles, 5 triples, 13 homers, 13 steals to 1 caught stealing. And let's look at the advanced stats here. What's that equate to for WRC plus? 110 WRC plus. In AAA, AAA is an offensive environment in general. And in the International League, it's pretty good for that. And oddly enough, in fifth, third field there in Toledo is not a great hitter's park overall, just by park factors. Despite the fact that you see a lot of hitting there, it's not the biggest run environment in AAA by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun to see. I assume they're going to want Parker Meadows to play just about every day. They may give him some time off. We talked before about just the other day was the cutoff for the service time factor. If you want to, the new rules now, if a player wins an award within his first 3 seasons, you end up getting draft pick compensation. But if he wins Rookie of the Year, if he becomes an MVP, and I don't think we have to worry about that, either of those with Parker Meadows, but just in case they waited this long, you might as well wait just in case. So they waited past. So now he's got 43 days of service time potential to get, and they'll probably give him some days off so he doesn't reach that 130 at-bat threshold. But I think we're going to see Parker Meadows play just about every day, which will be interesting. It'll be really interesting to see how they handle this because Akil Baddoo has been playing pretty well too. And Raj and I were talking about this when we went down to Toledo on Friday night, watched the Mudhens play. And then Raj went to Akron by himself on Saturday, watched 2 Seawolves games yesterday and today. So we got our quota of minor league games in. But we were talking about when Akil Baddoo is at his best, he looks like a potential all-star, right? Like he's hitting for power. He's getting on base. He's causing havoc. He's stealing bases. And it's just never been, he's never been able to maintain that for very long. And it's sometimes it feels like bad luck where he's, remember he got injured when he collided with Derek Hill in the outfield, or he pulls a hammy or something like that. And then other times it just goes cold for too long. And I still don't think we really know what Akil Badu is, which is strange after parts of three seasons, but I'm sure they'll figure out a way to give him time and give Meadows time. And Matt Vierling has been a solid offensive performer, hasn't hit a home run in 2+ months now, which is an issue, right? You need your outfielders to hit for power, but he's been getting on base. He's been playing pretty good defense on the infield and the outfield. We assume that they're going to move him to third. And really, I don't know if it's going to be McKinstry. Ibanez is playing second base more, but Vierling will play more third. And then you've got Meadows, Green, and Carpenter in the outfield in some formation, Meadows, Green, Carpenter, Badu. But it's fun. This is what we've been asking for most of the year, and it's finally here. And it doesn't hurt that it happens after the Tigers take 3 or 4 from Cleveland. The Tigers continue their dominance of the Central Division, which is super frustrating, right? Because they lose to everybody else, and they're still 10 games under 500, but they're pretty good against the Central. So at least you have bragging rights there, even if they don't win the division. But as I said, Raj and I went down to Toledo on Friday night, and we were trying to decide if we wanted to go to West Michigan to see Jackson Joe pitch again, South Bend, or go to Toledo. And Raj has been to Toledo 4 or 5 times this year, and I had only been once. I went on opening day, which I had forgot was actually March 31st. So it's been almost 5 months since I've been down there. And on a given day, they had 6, 7 hitters worth watching. So it felt like it was time to go down there. And as a special bonus, we got Sawyer Gibson Long pitching, who is rapidly rising, I would say, in the Tigers starting pitching ranks. But yeah, I don't want to go crazy and say that he's a sure thing big league starting pitcher, but he's getting close to getting called up. So, it was, ended up being a good night. We saw Sawyer Gibson Long set a career high, I think, with 12 strikeouts. If it's not a career high, it's one off his career high, but it was certainly his best AAA start. He only gave it one hit, and it was basically a blooper. 2 walks, hit a guy, but the slider was working, his changeup was working. He was locating the fastball, and it's 90-95. But yeah, really impressive outing from him. I've been saying he kind of reminds me of Alex Viedo. It's when his slider is on, he's really tough for right-handers to hit. And he's been developing his cutter and the changeup to get lefties out, and it's working so far. So yeah, really a fun developmental story there. You recall they got him for Michael Fulmer from the Twins, and we didn't have him in our top 30, I think, the first couple times we ranked the system. But he just kept performing. We heard that the front office actually likes him, which lends us a little, maybe taking a closer look at him. And yeah, he's just been pitching really well. And if all things go right, we're actually going to talk to him tomorrow. So that should be fun. But yeah, so we were there in Toledo. We got to see Colt Keith hit a home run, which is always fun. We enjoy those. It's his 20th of the year. And then we also got to see doubles from Wenzel Perez and Parker Meadows. And it may have been Parker Meadows' last AAA hit. Who knows? And then Justin Malloy had a pretty good game. He got a double. He also hit a ball 110 miles an hour off the top of the left field wall, and he hit it so hard he got thrown out at second. He didn't have enough time. He's not the fastest in the world, but so we got a pretty good game there. Shut out the Muttons, had 17 strikeouts overall. But we can get in. Let me go through here and see if there's any more questions before we start getting into the actual recaps, because I like to wait for Raj for those if possible. We're looking up people speculating about who's going to get released. That's a tough one. We always talk about that, right? Like somebody comes up, somebody has to go down, and it's not always fun. But there are certainly options on the Tigers. They could, if they want, they're going to have Vierling playing third base more, then it's probably going to be one of Maton, McKinstry, Ibanez, Short, right? You're right. That's who would make the most sense. Maton seems to be the one playing the least. If you're bringing up a left-hander, you may send down a left-hander. I don't know. We'll see. We'll know soon enough, but let's see. Christopher Cita said, hey, Chris, how you doing tonight? I'm doing well, Chris. Thank you for asking. They crutched the demo. Perez now in Toledo. Wenzel Perez is in Toledo. I don't know if there's a different Perez I'm not thinking of. I'm looking through. Carpenter has only played 80 games. Sorry. I'm just, how's Max Clark doing? Who was that? Asked that. Michael Rimmer. Max Clark down in the Florida Complex League. He's doing fine. He's not, hitting a ton. but I think he went 2 for 7 the other day. It was just an interminable game. They played forever. 13-10 was the final score. It went to extra innings. Brett Callahan hit a 3-run homer in the extras to lead them to the win. But yeah, both Clark and McGonigal, you watch those games and it's really bad baseball. Honestly, some of these guys are throwing 87 to 89 with their fastballs. And then other guys will be throwing 96, 97. But none of them throw a ton of strikes. If you find a guy throwing strikes, it's you celebrate. But yeah, Clark is doing fine. They're getting their footing in pro ball. He's playing fine in the outfield. When he gets on base, he's disruptive. He's walking a fair amount. Same with McGonigal. McGonigal, we haven't really seen the glimpses of power, which is probably going to be the ultimate determinant of how good of a player he can be, because he's got 10 walks, 3 strikeouts right now. He's like, they don't throw a lot of strikes in the complex leagues. You can't judge much on that, but he's a guy who doesn't expand much. So just a matter of getting the barrels on the ball. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, guys, in the complex league this week. We saw Cenk Diaz pitch, I think, at least once. He threw 2 innings, scoreless. Andrew Dunford pitched, although it was only to 1 batter. It was 1 pitch, and he got a pop out, and that was it. And Carson Rucker hit a grand slam. So it was fun for those guys down there. But Max Clark is doing fine. No need to worry. No need to push him. We might see him in Lakeland, but no big deal. If we don't, let's see. Yes, Isan Diaz is already in Toledo. He was already sent down. Let's see. Yeah. We're talking about Matt Chapman here. That's something we can discuss probably on Motor City Metrics. Did we fix Joey Wentz? I don't know. I think facing the Cleveland Guardians is probably a good fix for just about any pitcher. That's not. It's a pesky offense, right? They force you to throw strikes, but if you do, they don't really punish you. So it's tough to know. I think it's likely that Joey Wentz is always going to have those kind of up and down starts, where there are games where he looks good and he's sharp, gets guys out, and other games where it seems like they know exactly what he's throwing and where he's throwing it, which is a classic up and down starter, right? It's we've seen it a little with Alex Viedo. He's been better than that, I would say. But yeah, so I don't know. We'll see what happens with Wentz next year, if he wins a job out of spring training, or if they go out and sign another starting pitcher, if they re-sign Eduardo Rodriguez. We'll see about that. But I think what I'm going to try to do now, unless anybody has any other questions immediately, I'm going to try to share the screen. We know anybody who's been watching this knows that it's an adventure when I do that. But I'm going to share the screen and talk a little bit about Toledo, because it's a AAA team. And they had a good week. They're almost back to 500 in the second half of the season. And something we should talk about. Right now, the Tigers, Erie's in first place. They're tied for first place. West Michigan's in first place. And Lakeland is in first place. The Tigers, and Erie already made the playoffs, so they're already in. But you've got 2 other teams vying for the playoffs, which is fun to see. We talked about it before. You don't want to make too much of winning in the minor leagues. You don't stack your roster with old quad A players just to win. But when you're trying to develop guys and you're winning, that's good. The Rays do that. The Dodgers do that. It's a good sign. It's a good sign that the So, week 19, as I understand, the Mud Hens, 22-23 overall, went 4-2 versus Omaha. That's Kansas City's AAA affiliate. They're not very good. Hey, there's Raj. He could save me from my... All right, we're moving this from the screen.
Yo.
Perfect timing. I just went on a full diatribe about everything and anything. We talked about politics in the Middle East. We talked about... We didn't, but I was just about to start doing the slides for Toledo, so...
I will get those slides ready to go right now.
Thank you. I was doing my best, Jared, but I'm always bad at it, so...
It's all right. You guys continue your discussion. Pretend I'm not here.
I talked a little bit about how fun it is with the young guys leading Detroit, and now they're adding Parker Meadows, which is big, right? People have been asking for that all year, and it finally happened. Discussing a little bit about that, we talked a bit about Max Clark. Just somebody asked about how he's doing, and I said, fine. And other than that, it was just, I mentioned that we went down to Toledo. I mentioned that you were out in Akron, but
shout out. So yeah. I want to give a shout out to Greg for having me on for 3 innings on Saturday, which is a rare thing. If you listen to Greg and Sam, they don't really have guest people on. Greg keeps it very professional. But I get really thank you. That was a really cool honor to be there. And it was happened to be the inning where all hell broke loose for Erie and the Bats. I stuck around today, had some great company, really good time today. I stuck around for a little bit, watched the first few innings, and then went from Akron to Bowling, Bowling to here. And so we're sponsoring a team. The Tiger Minor Report, the one of the guys on my team has his wife works for a marketing company, and they're going to make our shirts for free. And I'm like, you want to be sponsored by the Tiger Minor Report? He's like, sure. So there'll be our logo on a shirt for the Tigers Bullpens team.
There you go. The Bullpens.
Bullpens.
Yeah, that just reminded me. While we were down in Toledo, ran into a listener in the bathroom. Oh, places. Dustin. So shout out to Dustin. Where I was washing my hands, and he goes, hey, I listened to your podcast every week. We're like, oh, man, thank you. So, yeah, Dustin, if you're listening, thank you again. It's always fun. We always really appreciate it when people recognize us because it makes us feel big.
Yeah, it was funny because I was drying my head. I didn't dry my hands correctly, and then he went to go shake my hand. I'm like, oh, no, and felt bad. So I didn't want to, I didn't want to shake somebody's hand with dry. My hands were clean. Anyway.
Yeah, no, all it was right. Fine. We were. I don't even think you went. Oh, yeah, you did. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like we say, it's nice to see people. And if you want to come chat with us, feel free, man. We love talking to everybody about baseball. And if you see us in the game, absolutely say hi.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Stan, too, Sean. I had talked to Stan for a few minutes this weekend, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So there will be a list. By the way, we're going to probably end up doing it. So tomorrow, we're going to have an article out on catching, or Colin wrote an article about some of the catching situation in the system. And they're more likely in a couple of weeks, there'll be probably when the season ends or not, we'll have actually, you know what? I'll probably create a Rule 5 list and put it on our website in a tab. I had it done.
That's right.
I did have, you know what? Wait a minute. I think I had it done. But anyway, I will put that up.
I can run it down real quickly.
Go ahead. Run it down.
So Dylan Dingler, any college player taken in the 2020 draft needs to be protected if they don't want to lose him. Right now, that's probably just Dylan Dingler. But also Wilmer Flores, who was an undrafted free agent, but he was a 2020 guy. Colt Keith was a high schooler, so he does not need to be protected, but they probably will eventually anyway if they plan on calling up next year. Sawyer Gibson Long will probably need to be protected because, as I mentioned earlier, he's getting awfully close to being big league ready, and that's a potential starter that you don't want to lose to some other team. Beyond that, it's Keiter Montero will need to be protected. We think that they'll protect him for sure. And then you're looking at maybe Jack O'Loughlin. Maybe Roberto Campos, maybe Andrew Magno. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I think that's about it, right? And Campos seems highly unlikely just because he's in high A and not, he's hitting fine, but not doing enough else for another team to think that they can stick him on the big league roster.
There's definitely also, because of the way he fields out there, is liability, honestly. So you really don't want to risk that right now. We did get a question whether is there a spot from the 40-man roster with Shreve being released. That's a good question.
Brought in Vasquez, right?
Released. I think Vasquez replaced him, didn't he?
I don't know if that was direct one-to-one. I'm looking at the Tigers 40-man right now.
Yeah, because I see Wengetter is back down there. He's on the 40-man. Vasquez is on there. Hill, Engler's on the 15-day IL. Boyd, Alexander. He was replaced by Backus. Okay, so he was. Okay. All right. Yeah. People answer the question in our chat. But yeah. All right. So let's get in. Did you get into Toledo yet?
I was just about to, right when you hopped on.
So, yeah, we were there. So, Friday's game, Sawyer Gibson Long probably pitched the best game I've ever seen him pitch. Just was a masterful game. We're going to be talking to him tomorrow night. We're going to be recording an interview with Sawyer Gibson Long. So, we'll have that on our channel so people can check that out. And if you have any questions for Sawyer Gibson Long, please leave them in the chat for us. And we'll throw them in there, too. But Wenzel Perez, I thought I had a pretty good game, too. And, oh, wow.
Blood right. Thank you.
Buy some of that barbecue at your next
barbecue. I don't think I've ever had the barbecue at West Michigan.
No, the Penguin barbecue? Like, yeah, there's a, I think it's.
Oh, that's right. I think we did try that.
Off the Frickers building.
No, barbecue off the Frickers building. I thought Wenzel Perez had a pretty good game Friday, too, as well. There was a lot. And also, it was a good chance to see Leonard out, or again, Chris's first opportunity. What was your thoughts on him when you saw him?
Yeah, the main thing that, so his first three plate appearances, he swung at the first pitch all three times. I think he put it in play twice. So I was like, all right, well, this is a pretty aggressive guy. But I knew that coming in. And then in his final plate appearance, he put together like a 7 or 8 pitch, really battled, really nice at bat, and ended it with a deep fly ball to right field, opposite field, not quite to the warning track, but it was a really nice plate appearance. And he had a couple really nice plays on defense. Like, I would like to see more to say, okay, this guy can actually play shortstop, but he looked fine at shortstop, right? Like, he looked like he's a guy who could fill in there at least. Yeah, he's a legit positional player prospect in the system. I think you're probably looking at a utility guy, right? Like they talked about playing him in the outfield, but seemed like some interesting tools there. So it wasn't like, oh man, this guy sucks. It wasn't anything like that. I was like, all right, he's aggressive. But in some regards, he feels a little bit more like an Avila Tigers prospect, if you will, like a Willy Castro, Victor Reyes type. There are tools there. Is he going to get to him because of the aggression? I don't know, but it wasn't a bad first impression. I'll say that.
Yeah, that one play where he was like scrambling to a chopper. That chopper he made a really nice play on Friday, and Tyler Nevins had the last good couple weeks. You mentioned it here, he's at over almost 600.
Normally we don't leave two lines for one player, but I was looking at stats last week and stats this week, and they're bonkers. Like, I don't think Tigers fans want to see him again. But if anybody else were hitting 500 with power, I think they'd probably get called up. So it wouldn't shock me if he gets called up before too long, too. He might be the September call-up guy. Just that one last look to make sure that they don't, if something is real there. But yeah, he's been bombing the ball.
He's been absolutely killing the ball. And they're probably going to have people ask when they're going to bring him up. But then, yeah, they're like, no, wait a minute. No, we can't have him. We can't have him up. We already know what he can do.
You can make that argument, right? We've seen it. He hasn't been good in the big leagues. He's been fine in Toledo. And more than fine, obviously, the last couple of weeks. But yeah, it's questionable as to whether he's actually a big leaguer. But if you hit that well, you might as well take one more look. And it was another, last week, it was Justin Henry Molloy getting BABIPed. He had like 1 for 21 week, but it wasn't a ton of strikeouts. It was just bad luck. And that's kind of Cole Keith this week. There was one game where he hit the ball hard 4 or 5 times. And it just happened to be, it was like second baseman or right at the right fielder. And we were talking about it in the game we were there. We were talking about, they're just not throwing Cole Keith fastballs for the most part, unless they have to. And that's what happened. The pitcher got behind 2-0. With a couple of breaking balls, changeups, Keith didn't swing at him. And so he had to throw him a fastball, and Cole Keith crushed it to the roost. I don't even know if it's still called the roost, but that sort of little upper deck outcrop there in right field.
I think it's called the roost still, I think.
But so he's still struggling a little bit with the AAA secondary pitches, but it's not, I don't think it's an issue, right? I don't think it's a ton of swing and miss. It's just, I think he's still living for the fastballs. And when he gets them, he crushes them, but they're not giving up to him. It's what you expect from AAA, a bunch of slop, right? And he's having to wade through that slop.
And one of the things that I noticed, too, is that they are increasingly throwing him on the inside, too. They are not giving him anything to put extend his hands out. And so when he hit that home run on Friday, was it Friday we saw him hit the home run?
Yeah.
Yeah, Friday. I thought he did a good job of dropping his hands and just able to get that on it pretty quickly. But other than that, it was just, he cannot, they're doing everything they can to just not allow him to get extension on anything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's pretty basic sequencing, right? They're going soft away and hard in. Yeah. But if they keep trying to go hard in, they're going to regret it because, yeah, like you said, he's got a really quick bat. He pulled his hands in, got the barrel on it, and drove it right down the line. So I think there's going to be a lot more soft away going forward still, but yeah, he was fine. And then, like I said, it was BABIP, but this week it was Justin Henry Molloy still hitting the ball just like he did last week, but he was finding the grass, finding the walls. That's a strong week. And you saw, he tweeted, he was super excited about Parker Meadows getting called up, which is nice.
I actually liked their tweet too.
Yeah. I think these guys know Parker Meadows was a 2018 draft pick, right? It's been 5 long years for him, grinded it out. 18 was rough. 19 was rough. 21 was rough. But 22, he figured it out, and here we are. He's going to get a taste of big leagues now, which is cool.
Yeah, he's going to definitely. Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for him. I really am. I think there's one thing that is very apparent to me about Parker Meadows is you have to look beyond the batting average too. People are just going, who's too bet? Sorry, people hate that voice. Nah, screw it. I'll do it anyways. It's my show. It's our show.
He's batting 253.
No, there's a little more to that. And he's been hitting lefties. The biggest improvement of Parker Meadows' game, the one thing that it was something that he really, really worked at was hitting against lefties. Like last year, he was in the low 220, like I think 220s or something to that effect. And yeah. And right this year, his split against lefties this year is pretty remarkable. He's batting 254, which is, but the big difference is he's batting with more consistent power on there. He's got a slugging potential over 500.
Last year against lefties, Parker Meadows hit 196, 225, 336. It's a 562 OPS, 3 home runs, 3 walks, 34 strikeouts. His OPS against righties was 888. So a more than 300 point difference. That does look like a guy with platoon issues, right? But you mentioned it this year, it's 254.
Yeah.
That's a 60 point raise in batting average. But as you also mentioned, not just batting average, power. So yeah, lefties, 254, 321, 500, 7 home runs against lefties this year, 13 walks to 33 strikeouts. So he's walking. His OPS against lefties this year, 821, righties, 818. He's actually hitting lefties better than righties overall. So pretty, as you said, pretty massive improvement. And I mentioned it earlier, he struggled for the first couple months since June 1st. He's hitting 271, 346, 527 overall.
He does that every year. Last two seasons or last three seasons he's done that where he's come on strong in the second half.
Yeah, it's fun, it's well deserved, and we're excited about it. So I was joking that we might have seen his last AAA hit. Probably unlikely. He'll probably be back in AAA at some point next year, at least a little bit, but still fun.
Yeah, by the way, the question of whether he's going to play more games in Austin, although granted it is a fair question to a certain extent, I don't know, I don't really feel comfortable answering that question because I know that he's dealing with mental issues and a lot of people are frustrated that he's not playing, but I just feel like whatever's going on with him, and yeah.
Then there, Harrison Garrett said, is Meadows a better center fielder than Riley Green? I think so.
Yeah.
It's tough. Riley Green, I think, has probably slightly better instincts. But Parker Meadows is a guy who doesn't make a lot of diving catches because he doesn't need to. He outruns the ball almost all the time. He's got really long strides. He can just track down just about everything. It's going to be really fun watching him play center field in Comerica. He may struggle a little bit, right? Not everybody is perfect when they get up. But I think your ideal outfield configuration has Parker Meadows in center and Riley Green in the corner. Take your pick which corner you want, right field, left field. But I might go left field in Comerica. I think left field's a little bit more territory to cover, and I think Green could do that well. But yeah, I think Meadows, honestly, I think Meadows' defense is probably going to be what keeps him in the big leagues for a long time. He's not like somebody asked him if he was like a Kevin Kiermaier, and I don't think he's that level. I don't think he's a Gold Glover, but I compared him before to Dexter Fowler, maybe at a ceiling. A guy who, a big, tall, rangy guy, can go out and get it. And who else? It was the Zimmer, the other Zimmer kid, the non-pitcher Zimmer, I thought.
Oh, is it not Bradley Zimmer?
It might have been Bradley. I don't know if it's Bradley Zimmer or Kyle Zimmer, but one of those guys, big, tall, rangy. And if he hits for power and gets on base and steals, that's just a bonus, I think. I think he'll do it enough to be a solid player. But you know, one of the things that I've been puzzled by a little bit is we just don't see him ranked. We had him fourth in our top 30 update because we thought the floor is really high because of that defense. But we keep seeing he's like 10th or lower to Pipeline and to Baseball America. And so I'm curious what the scouts are seeing that we aren't. So maybe we'll find out in the big leagues. Maybe he'll just be drowning up there, but I don't know. I think he'll be okay.
I think so too. And you look at, I think, what's going to happen here based off what happened today, you could probably see another move or two in the next couple of weeks. I think there's going to be moves more. So especially with the end of the season coming along, the Tigers, let's talk about the big league club for a moment. Take a series against Cleveland. You saw Spencer Torkelson did a really good job on that. And it leads, because it does lead to a conversation with Carson Kelly. And I kid you not, Chris and I, when Carson Kelly got released by Arizona, I go, somehow I thought, we even said it, I wish I would have said it aloud, said the Tigers could probably make a move on him. But then, remember, we talked about that on the podcast, and they're like, well, who would be moved? And unfortunately, it was Eric Haas. And by the way, whether he accepts the assignment or not, or goes down to lead, or whatever happens to Eric Haas, we wish him the best. Dearborn kid, so anybody that's grew up around here knows him, and he's familiar with the area. It's unfortunate, but the Tigers really are in this position now where they can't have sentimental ties, and it's not going to be the days where guys like that can stick around. They either a producer or gone. But
This is the second one this year. First it was Scope, and now it's Haas. Unfortunately, like I talked earlier, catching's so hard, and it's people don't appreciate how hard it is, I don't think. And it's just tough, though, because you still have to hit a little bit. And we've seen him do it before, but he just wasn't doing it this year. And honestly, I think it was more about they just don't think Haas is part of their future, right? Like if they thought Carson Kelly, if he comes up and plays well, they've got him for next year as well. So I think that was just like, all right, let's get a look at another guy before just sticking with Haas all the rest of the year. Yeah, it's a bummer, but it's the way it is, man. It's professional sports. You got to produce. And they gave him a pretty long leash, and it just didn't happen for him. But as you said, we wish him well, and maybe it's not the end of Eric Haas, right? It'd be cool if he gets to hop on a playoff team or something like that and be a third catcher, or who knows. But it would also be cool if he sticks around in the org and maybe comes back up next year.
As far as, did they show their hand with the singles promotion?
Singles promotion?
Yeah. Are they going to be like one promotion? Is that what he's...
Dingler promotion.
Dingler promotion.
It was the old...
I don't think so. I think, because even more, I was talking to Greg over the weekend, the Erie Seawolves announcer. He was even, we talked about this on air, he was even caught off guard with Dingler going up. And so I think that was, again, here's what I think. The Tigers were set to make a trade with the Dodgers, and there was rumors there was a catching prospect involved in that. So I think what happened is that whoever they were going to get in the E-Rod deal was going to come in, and Dingler probably would have stayed in Erie the rest of the year. But now, because they released Andrew Haas, their down a catcher, and
Andrew Knapp and Eric Haas.
So with that being said, I think that was the reason why. I think that's just, again, just educated guess. So I think the reason why, by the way, I think the reason why it's a bummer to some people, and he wasn't producing for people, but he's a local guy, and it's been a long time since the Tigers had somebody local they can tie with. The last person I could think of, really, that top of my head is Pat Sheridan. I'm talking like 40 years ago. Pat's the last player I can remember, or 85, 86 was the last time I remember. Pat Sheridan was from Westland, the same city that Eric Haas is from. So
Daniel Fields was up for one game, I think.
Yeah, but that doesn't. Yeah,
no, I'm trying to say. I can't recall. No, it's Stan, you're right. It's just one of the things where when we cover these guys, we see the guys grinding in the minors, and then they get released. It's just always a little bit of a bummer when the dream comes to an end, right? Like the local kid, he was on the local team. It was a great story, but as we said, you got to produce, and at the end of the day, he didn't. So it's not a bummer for the team. It's just a bummer on a personal level, because you hate to see that happen to anybody, really, except for there are a select few players that you don't mind getting. Let's say Aubrey Huff was on the team again. You don't mind him getting blown out or something like that, but it's or a Trevor Bauer type giant jerks, if you will. You don't mind so much. We've talked about it before. Haas was the one guy willing to talk to the media after win, lose, disaster, whatever. You remember that crazy game last year in Minnesota where the mud ball, it was Miguel Sano, deep fly ball to right field. And I don't remember who it was who dropped it. And then they had him out at home, and then Haas threw it into left field. He talked to the media after that. It was a horrible mistake, but he owned up to it. And that's just, I think the beat writers give credit to guys like that.
No, okay, so John Schreiber, yes, to a, yeah, pitching wise. I'm talking about positional player wise. I should have specified positional player wise. Any Van Hecken, I'm sorry, Michael, that was a Grand Rapids guy, and I'm talking like somebody in Metro Detroit. I'm talking Metro Detroit area. John Schreiber would probably be a good example. Dave Bobrowski, I remember more him as the Houston Astros than the Detroit Tiger. Sorry. And Drew Verhagen was from Grand Rapids. Same thing, though. It's not.
Verhagen was?
Yes.
I had no idea. I'll be damned. I thought it sounds like a Grand Rapids name. I just remember him from Vandy. Andy Van Hecken with the great, what is it, complete game with one strikeout in his debut or whatever. But
yeah.
In any event, Haas is gone.
And Cleveland is a catcher. They're getting only outside of Bo Naylor. They don't really have any production.
And they had Haas originally. But they just got rid of a catcher, right, to let Naylor play more often.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. But anyway, yeah, we can move down to Erie. You were there in Akron. You saw some of this action.
Yeah, so Luis Santana's home run to center field was, this guy is a small guy, but he's all muscle. Excuse me. And it was one of those things where you watch it happen. It was a pitch that came on the inside. Santana just took, and just a blast. Not most unexpected blast. They were getting no hit for six innings against the guy who they hit up pretty well when he was in Erie. Then they bring in a reliever who they had no luck against, and they were just teeing off. Chase Young hit a home run. Chris Myers hit a home run. It was a different team, and they kept, for every time that Akron had an answer, the Seawolves responded pretty well. And I think the biggest takeaway, too, especially Brant Herder's start, which was Saturday, it wasn't his sharpest start. He started calming down a little bit. He had a rough outing a little bit in the beginning, but it was really Myers and Bigby. Bigby was another guy who, yeah, I like how you put that in there, down week. He was a guy that kind of got, he's the one that gets things going. On Saturday, he got a hit, started everything up, and it was just a little chop grounder that he beat out and broke up the no-hitter, and then he allowed for the pitching change to happen. And Daniel Cabrera, in the limited time I did see him, had played pretty good defense on right field, too. Like, I know he's not a quote-unquote top prospect anymore, but Cabrera's been playing serviceable out there. But Young, again, one of the things I was talking to the guys about on the broadcast, too, was that apparently a lot of the write-up on Young is that he doesn't play good defense, and I beg to differ. I don't understand where this narrative is coming from. I think he's done a pretty good job on defense. He plays his range well, and he makes a sure throw, and something I joked about that didn't have with Perez.
Yeah, with Chase Young, we had all sorts of concerns heading into this year just by what he looked like last year. I was worried he wasn't going to hit for power. He's dispelled that notion pretty soundly. I was worried he wasn't going to play good defense. He's super steady. Like you said, if he can get to the ball, he makes the play. I'm not worried about his defense at all. It's not the most range you'll see from a second baseman, but that might come into play twice a week, if that, maybe once a week, right? If he can get to it, he's making the play. That's all I care about. I still have some concerns about the pure hit tool, but he's still walking a decent amount, and he's still hitting for that power. He's climbing up my personal list. I had him 13th, I think, in the last update, and I think I need to soften that negativity because he's doing everything else, really. I'm still a little bit concerned about breaking balls down and in and fastballs up, but it's hard to argue with the production, that's for sure.
As far as, and Sam bringing up Bigby, regardless of his draft spot, it doesn't matter where his draft spot is. He has produced, granted, but again, where are you going to put him? So right now with Parker Meadows, a good opportunity would be for Bigby to go from Erie to Toledo. They don't have the room. He's a guy who has to play on a regular basis. And if they don't have the regular at-bats, I don't see the point in bringing him up. I'm sorry, I don't. Somebody like that without giving them the regular amount of bats, at least in my opinion.
It'll be really interesting to see. I wonder if we're just going to see Wenzel Perez in center field on a regular basis in Toledo now. Because Witherspoon's gone. So the other outfielders they played Lipsius in the corner. Malloy's a corner outfielder. I'm trying to think, like Leonard, maybe we'll see Leonard get some center field time. Kreidler has played center a little bit, but it wouldn't shock me if it's Perez in center for the most part. And then you've got Malloy in one corner. and they theoretically could call up Bigby. We talked about this before. Like you said, it's just a matter of him making sure he's playing every day. These guys, they want them to get at bats. That would be fun. That would be a nice sort of proof of concept of we're pretty high at Bigby. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily like something that they feel like they have to do, right? It would be a nice reward for him, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's another thing too. And Perry brings up a good point. They're going to need him for the playoffs because honestly, without him in the lineup, their offense is straw that stirs the drink, man. I really believe that.
No, absolutely. Like he's on base all the time, mostly through hits, but it's not like we said, he has 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. He's not a big strikeout guy. He's not a huge walk guy, but he walks enough. So he's on base plenty. And then you've got Young and Myers who are the power hitters. And beyond that, yeah, it's you know, Malgeri has his on weeks and his off weeks. And yeah, every now and then you get this Luis Santana week or you get a Jake Holton strong week. But yeah, without Bigby, that offense would take a huge hit. Now, again, how much do you care about that as opposed to getting Bigby some looks at AAA pitching? I don't know. But I don't think it would hurt him to stay in AA and make the playoffs, but he just didn't hit in 350 plus. So maybe he does need a new challenge. I don't know.
Yeah. If I'm the Seawolves or I'm the organization, I want him to experience as much winning as possible. Have him stay in Erie, get the playoff experience and go from there. Toledo's not going to make the postseason this year. I think Lakeland, West Michigan still have an opportunity to.
They're both
in first place. And with the two call-ups, the call-up at the beginning of September, that's really, I think Erie fans would be really upset too. And that, think about the fans' perspective here, that this is an organization that's going to the postseason for the second season in a row. It rarely happens. And so I think Gabe Alvarez has done a hell of a job with all the changes that have occurred with the pitching staff too, the injuries and what have you. And I think just it would make sense for me. It would make sense for him just to stay there. I know people want him in Toledo, but again, just for my personal opinion, I know we saw Dylan Cruz get the call up to AA tonight. The Nationals called him up AA. Every organization is going to be different. The Angels are going to do stupid things. That's what they're going to do because they don't have any prospects. But continue. Go ahead.
It's you can say it's stupid, but I think they went into the draft the last couple of years looking at guys that. Couple of really small school guys who produced at crazy levels, and they thought, okay, these guys can probably do it. And Zach Neto has done it in the big leagues, and Nolan Chanuel, he was involved in a triple play in his first game, which is cool. But yeah, I don't know. I the one thing that kind of strikes me about Erie is you look at the pitching stats there. There wasn't a ton of like outstanding pitching this week. Even Lyle Lockhart, I didn't put his numbers up there. He's been their best pitcher, probably most consistent pitcher over the last couple months. He got blown up today, but they still came back and won. And that's just a testament. Again, it's a testament to the team and to Gabe Alvarez that they keep winning with, despite losing early in the year, they didn't have Navigato and they didn't have Dingler and they struggled. Then they got Navigato and Dingler and they were great. They've now lost Navigato and Dingler again, but they're figuring out ways to win.
Yeah.
Big hits and big moments, and the pitching is coming through when they can. It's Ty Madden. It's just frustratingly middling. Given his arm talent, but that's what he does. Seemingly, he'll follow an outstanding outing with kind of 5 innings, 4 runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. That's like a classic Ty Madden down start, if you will. And as you mentioned, Brant Herder had a rough, I want to say first inning, then settled down after that.
Pretty much. He was able to get ahead of counts again. He was struggling earlier, and when he fell behind, that's when the Ducks took advantage of it. But this is here's the thing. Toledo Mudhens are the last team to win a title. I believe it was they won the Governor's Cup in 2005. And haven't.
The Whitecaps won. The Whitecaps won in 2016.
Oh, sorry. Erie has never won anything.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sorry. I meant to say. Oh, you're right. I totally forgot about the Whitecaps title. The Whitecaps won a title.
It was 2015.
2015, 2016.
One of those 2 years.
Yeah.
They had Joe Jimenez on the team. So that tells you how long ago it was. Anyway.
Yeah. So Erie deserves the championship title ring. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the front office would want one. Merch people, whomever. would want that ring. Don't give me the look, Chris. Don't give me the look. Because you know why I say merch people? Because I would get a fake ring in there. Because you know that their merch person would probably go and put a bunch of rings out there.
Well, they gave out those a couple years back. They gave out the fake rings, the fake championship rings. It'd be nice to give out real ones, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. About
that. And they probably would do a fan, like, replica championship ring. I'm sure they would.
Yeah.
So that would be fun.
And for selfish reasons, I would just want one of those.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, but let's move on. Let's move on to West Michigan. And the Whitecaps took care of business against South Bend. They now control their own destiny in first place. And it was funny. Well, actually, it was not necessarily fun. It was funny to see Carlos Pena back, because we had no idea what happened to him. He just disappeared for a couple weeks. And this was probably the best stat line Elvis Alvarado has put up all season. We were hearing some rumors about him having some arm issues and not willing to deal with it. And the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway too, they asked me who would be somebody that could go up the area right now and help out. And I mentioned Troy Melton, and he had another good week.
Yeah, you know what? I wanted to look up. I was scrambling toward the end of trying to get these things up before the show started, and I didn't finish Lakeland. So just to let you know, I got close, but to the next slide, there might be a couple of things missing. But yeah, I'm curious how Melton, I'm going to try to look it up right now, where he stacks up among all the pitchers in the Midwest League this year, because, and we talked to Jeff last week, and he was the guy he seemed most interested in the Tiger system, at least among the pitchers. Yeah, what a really odd outing, right? Six innings, barely any contact, or barely any, zero damage, but only one strikeout, just a lot of weak contacts. I don't know. I think there's a lot to like with Melton. I think he's still learning to pitch. But yeah, if they need an arm, he's certainly got that, right? He can come up and he's thrown enough strikes. He's got the fastball and the other stuff, flashes. Yeah, that would be a fun arm for them to get. The arm everybody's watching is Jackson Jobe, right? And we made the right decision to go to Toledo on Friday instead of West Michigan, because we saw Jobe's two previous start in person. And not that we don't like seeing that, but it's like, all right, let's go see some of these Toledo bats. And Jobe struggled. I actually haven't gone back to watch. I saw a commentary that the ump in that game wasn't particularly good. It was really squeezing them, which happens in the minor leagues. They're minor league umps. So I have to go back and watch, but doesn't shock me. He's going to have some bumps in the road. Remember, he's probably got fewer than 100 professional innings still, maybe slightly over 100. But there's no debating the stuff with Jobe.
Yeah. And yeah, it was to see how sort of Gibson Long went out there and dominated too against lefties too. We'll be talking more with him tomorrow. But if you're just tuning into the podcast, if you have a question for sort of Gibson Long, you want us to use the question, just leave them in the chat below on the YouTube side of things. And if you're listening on audio, thank you for listening. But Isaac Pacheco, there was another guy that Greg and Sam asked me about. And yeah, oh boy.
I would hesitate to say a lost year for him, but it's just been a really rough year. He's hitting 192 or 190 now, just not hitting, which is really disappointing based on what we saw last year. We thought that he was really good. You know, had a chance to take off this year, and it hasn't happened. Doesn't mean the book is closed on him by any means. I think he's going to have to make some swing changes in the offseason. He seems consistently late on fastballs, consistently early on breaking balls, swinging over breaking balls and under fastballs. Basically, he's going to have to figure out something to get to the ball quicker. Some guys can do that. Some guys can't. We talk about Parker Meadows. Parker Meadows did that, but Parker Meadows never had, even when he was struggling, didn't have the strikeout issues that Pacheco has had this year, which gives you some concern. The power's there, the defense is there, the arm is there. You just got to hope that he can figure out the hit tool next year. It's a big year from next year.
It's definitely a big year. And defensively, he's fine too. And he does a good job on the left side of the infield. But yeah, you're right. Colin mentions in there, Meadows took his time before he developed, and he's only 19, 20 years old. So Pacheco still has time.
Yeah, no, that's all I was saying is, and that's a great point. You hope that Pacheco can follow in Meadows' footsteps, and maybe it's not next year even. Maybe it's 2 years from now. And even if that happened, it wouldn't be a big deal, right? Get him to AA in 2025. Yeah. He'd still be okay on track. But as I said, like the issues are different. Meadows, it was just not making solid contact ever. It was a lot of lazy fly balls to left field, and it was a lot of pulled rounders to second base. And he finally figured out how to hit the ball harder. That's not an issue with Pacheco. It's just an issue of getting the bat on the ball, which is always a little bit more concerning to me because he's missing in the zone a lot. But there are things that can be done about that, and hopefully he will figure it out in the offseason.
You know what's funny, by the way, is I was just thinking about this because we haven't – it just dawned on me that Parker Meadows was one of our first ever interviews we had on the channel.
Yeah, might be the first video.
Yeah, I think it might be. Yeah, I believe it would be – I believe it is the first video on our channel. I'm going to pull it up real quick because obviously you can't
– I just looked it up. That Melton has his 1.82 ERA is the second lowest in Midwest League among all pitchers with 50 innings. 1.82.
Wow. That's impressive.
The fifth is like three, but still.
Yeah. No, but by the way, it's funny. One of the, for the Kevin Montero's AAA start, the thumbnail was the ice cream.
Yeah. But that, I don't make, Raj does, people don't know, Raj does all the graphics. He does all the podcast producing. He does all the graphics. So if there's a video on YouTube without a graphic, it's because I put it up there and I didn't tell him or didn't have time and I didn't try. But yeah, so sometimes it automatically picks out some really funny stills.
You did do the Nick Quintana one, though, graphic.
Oh, God. That was years and years ago. Yeah.
Four years ago. Yeah.
That was... I made it. I tried to make it as silly as possible. Is that still there?
Yeah, it's still there. It looks like a Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah, I was trying to make it. Yeah. So look at young man, skinny, also Parker Meadows.
Yeah.
90 games this year.
Our mic audio is pretty bad, but anyways, if you go and look for it there, it's, again, actually, I'll probably even send the link in there for anybody watching. Yeah, but this is early on. So anybody that remembers us putting this up, first and foremost, you win a cookie.
Sticking with us, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, first of all, thanks for sticking with us. But if you've been here since the beginning and you actually remember this I will give you a t-shirt. I will. I definitely will. Because this is early on in the early days where we had literally no idea what we were doing audio-wise. We just went as we went. And so, anyway. All right. Some Parker Meadows throwback. I'll throw in there. We also have a Brian Garcia interview, too, if anybody is interested.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was the day I met Alan Trammell. That was the day that somehow Alan Trammell would... Yeah, that was...
Damn you, Tram.
Damn you, Tram. And
no,
I
don't know if we've told that on the podcast before.
Oh, yeah. So Alan Trammell came up to us, and what was it, Chris? Go ahead.
He's the roving infield instructor, and that dude works. He's not an assistant to the GM in name. He's down there taking infield for 3-4 hours, working with the guys. He's still playing baseball. And all I just wanted him to tell me about various minor leaguers, and he just wouldn't do it. I'm not really comfortable. I haven't seen him in a while. I was asking about player after player and he wouldn't tell me anything. So I'm like, all right, I know you're a Hall of Famer, but I don't want to talk about that. So I'll talk to you later. And then Raj got to have a nice sit down conversation with him and talk to him about the past. And that was really cool. I don't know. I recorded that, but I don't know if the audio came through at all.
No, the audio was,
it's just a moment for Helio and Alan Trammell to save her forever.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Yeah. It was like, thanks, Tram.
Yeah, I forgot every single stat about Alan Trammell. I was reciting the stats before.
Didn't the Ninja Beast call me a creepy guy?
Jeez. All right. So let's go to Lakeland. And Lakeland this week had a phenomenal week. And okay, before you say Roger, they had a 3-3 week. They came back from 14 runs down. And it messed with it. And Chris's theory is correct. I think it messed with the Marauders because they were never the same after that. They were up 14-0 in the debut, Paul Skeens, and Lakeland came back within one and lost within a run.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned it last week's show. We said this is a super scrappy team, and I think we even said like they could be down 9-0 and come back and take the lead. And I was joking about that, but serious, like they've done that a bunch. And yeah, that was almost the most remarkable comeback I've ever seen because I joked about it. I put Max Anderson hit a home run, and I joked about it. I said, and that pulls Lakeland to within 13 runs. And then they just kept adding on runs and adding on runs. And they had the bases loaded with one out in the ninth inning when they were down 14-13. I thought for sure they were going to come back because Bradenton's pitchers were struggling to throw strikes. They were hitting guys. And Seth Stevenson was up, and he is just a menace, right? Like, he gets on base, he causes all sorts of trouble, but they struck him out. And then Christian Santana was up, and he just missed. He wasn't close to the wall, but another quarter inch, half inch farther down the bat, and it would have been a grand slam. He just missed it. So, yeah, it was a hell of a comeback. And then, like you said, yeah, after that, I think they had a doubleheader, and they split that. And then I want to say they won the last two games. Maybe not, but they certainly today they were holding Braden to one hit, and it was a wild game. They was scoreless until the ninth, and then they scored a run and they called a rain delay. They came back, I don't know, half of an hour later, and Abel Bastidas hit a grand slam, and it was one of the weakest grand slams you'll ever see. He's batting left-handed, hit it to left field, and it was 90 miles an hour off the bat. I put that in there. And somehow it cleared the left field fence. They all count. And then immediately after that, they called another rain delay. And right. Sure enough, they won 6-0. But yeah, so that was a big, because Bradenton, I think, is two. Like, they're in third right now, and they had a chance to get into first place, and Lakeland held them off. So it was a nice week for them.
They needed that week, too, because there was first and foremost, they're on TV. They're on TV. And Jaden Hamm, it was the first time I seen Jaden Hamm pitch. Man, I love that windup, dude. That's going to be a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, it feels like a potential reliever a la Tyler Madison down the road. But I think they're going to continue developing him as a starter. They might as well. But he threw almost exclusively fastballs today. And he got a couple diving catches, or got a diving catch and a nice running catch from J.D. McLaughlin in third center field. But other than that, yeah, he was looked good. He was locating the fastball, and he threw a couple breaking balls. But yeah, he's going to be a fun guy to watch next year for sure. I don't know if he will start in West Michigan, but yeah, it was nice to see. That was the big thing about this week, was they're in Bradenton, which means it's our last chance to see these guys on video. And we got some pretty good looks. I got Marcano's outing there. I don't even know if that is actually correct. I don't think I updated it properly. Colin Fields had a good outing. I'm going to try to go get that. Marcano was out there. He pitched well. But yeah, it's just nice to be able to see these guys on TV a little bit. Christian Santana had a very Christian Santana week. Just doing what he does. A couple of hits, but one of them was a home run, and then more walks and strikeouts. Jose De La Cruz, I think he had a bomb in one game, but Max Anderson was the big. He was doing the Julio Rodriguez act. He just kept getting hits. Some of them were infield hits, some of them were outfield, but kept getting on. And somebody who asked, Harry said, how old is Anderson? He's 21. He was their second round pick this year. And he's a second baseman right now, potential first baseman down the road, maybe. And there's some concern about him just not being like a huge athlete. But so far, so good with the bat. He's hitting a lot of opposite field hitting, which I don't know if that's, you don't know if, this is our big question with Justice Bigby was is he doing that because he can or because he has to? And with Bigby, it's because he can. With Anderson, I think it's because he cared, but we don't really know. It's still low A.
Yeah. Hang on a little beat on that. But there was who had that opposite field grand slam? That was just today.
That was Bastidas. It was the flukiest home run ever. I think it got caught in the wind in like 30 mile an hour wind or something like that. Cause it just barely reached out and poked it. And it just went, but yeah. So, man, good week for them. I'm trying to think. Let me look at I think I had their stats up. If there's anybody else that Matt Walker, rehabbing lefty. He was in the Arizona Fall League not that long ago. 5 innings, only 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts. Not bad. Joe Miller, decent start. 4 innings, only 1 run. Cliverth Perez, a lefty reliever. Not bad. I'm looking down. Edgardo Ibarra had the monster, like the awful outing. That was the one that 14-0 game. He just got blown up. If he's a soft tossing lefty, it's like the next Carlos Pena, maybe. He just had a rough outing, but it happens. And I didn't finish the Flying Tigers report, so I also did not touch the Complex League reports, but I did get to see some Complex League games this week. Watching on video.
Somebody asked us the difference between Complex League and Single A, and it's basically Complex League is almost like simulated games is the best way I could describe it. It's a lot of raw talent. You're not going to see, don't get me wrong, it's, you're still going to see some guys in there, but it's slightly above college ball, Chris?
What, complex league? I wouldn't go that far. I would say it's slightly above high school ball. It's the quality of high school baseball with guys who have, with half the guys have some major league tools. So picture a bunch of baby giraffes running around or something like that. Like I mentioned earlier, you watch the games and there's some guys who are sitting 87 to 90 and that's their fastball. And then there's another guy throwing 96, 98 and nobody throws strikes. There's occasional strike throwing, but it's not good baseball at all. It's not uncommon to see 4 or 5 errors in a game. It's not uncommon to see catchers who can't catch. So it really is just a chance for these young guys to get out there and play sort of organized baseball. Like you said, it's like scrimmages basically, but
it's organized chaos. In other words.
Yeah. But you do see some guys with legit skills, right? There was a kid on Philly who I'm blanking on his name, but the broadcast, he was doing 20-21 at IVB on every fastball. And I was like, and he kept throwing it at the bottom of the zone. I'm like, dude, throw it at the top of the zone. What are you doing? And when he's doing it at the top of the zone, swing and miss every time. But so it's a lot of learning. But we got a couple outings I mentioned earlier, a couple outings from Cenk Diaz. Hopefully that's how he pronounces his name. That's how I'm pronouncing his name for now. We'll see. 3 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, didn't give up any runs. He looks impressive. He was up to 95, 96. Breaking ball is like 2,700, 2,800 RPMs as a legit changeup. There's a lot to like there for an 18-year-old kid who, you know, barely played in high school. We also saw Jonathan Rogers. Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, I like the mechanics. Is it just me, Chris? Is that kind of a, we don't see a pitch. The Tigers usually, a guy like kind of almost over the top, right? Almost like in his.
Let me see. With Cenk Diaz, I got some video on my phone. I'm going to take a look.
I'll pull it up on X real quick. Because we did.
I wish you would stop calling it X, damn it.
Sorry. I know. I'm just. I saw news stations in Akron over the weekend. Go. You can find us on X. So I'm like, oh okay. Well, go. Yeah. Now.
Yeah. I was just looking at it. It's high 3/4. It's he looks like he's a fully grown dude, but also looks like there's a chance that he could slim up a little bit. I don't know how to say it. Like, he's not fat or anything like that, but it just feels like he's not more grown. Like you get him into a professional training regimen and he seems like a guy who could really. So this is Jaden Hamm, right?
Yeah. Sorry.
I was talking about Cenk Diaz.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no, Jaden Hamm, you're right. It's a more over the top. Like I said, it's a little bit like Madison and like Holub, where it's over the top fastball and he pairs it with a downer breaking ball. You didn't see a ton of the breaking ball today, but I do watch him Jaden Hamm pitch. He was up to 95 today, average about 93.5. And there's some deception too with that windup. Nice running catch by McLaughlin there.
And this is where the Flying Tigers need pitching really bad. And it's good to see Jaden Hamm come in there and hold the zone. That was a good sign because I could see him starting the season in Lakeland before getting a call up to West Michigan.
Yeah, and there's always a question about college guys, college draft picks. Are they going to pitch at all after the draft? And it's nice to see them getting out there at least.
Yeah, I will take a lap in the morning tomorrow. I'm running on fumes here, but anyway, yeah, this was Cenk Diaz. Did we post that on Twitter, Chris? Or?
I didn't yet. I was trying to figure out a way to get it where I was also displaying the TrackMan. I thought that would be fun for the watchers, but I couldn't figure it out, and then I had to go to a birthday party. But yeah, no, he's a guy who it's a big arm. I think I'm excited. I think we probably won't see him in West Michigan next year. He'll probably be in Lakeland. But yeah, he's one of the most exciting guys that they drafted this year, I think, in my mind. We also saw Andrew Dunford, who was like 92, 93, only threw one pitch in the outing the other day. He got a pop-up, but he pitched a little bit more earlier than. And one fun thing, one of the games this week, the FCL Tigers played at Joker Marchant, which meant he was on Hawkeye. So we got all the spin data on Diaz. We got it all on Jonathan Rogers, their 20th round pick. Who was not throwing very hard. He was like 90, 91, but he spins it really well. And same for Blake Pivaroff, the 19th round pick, I think he was. Maybe, that sounds about right, the Arizona State kid.
Yeah.
He's a spin monster. he was throwing 90, 92, but the curveball was 3,000 plus RBMs. So if you can get him some velocity, that's another interesting player to keep an eye on. So yeah, just some fun stuff. The one other guy I want to mention, the FCL, and I talked to Gary about this, was Joe Adametz, who was the guy that, I don't know how to pronounce his name. He was a guy from Liberty that they drafted last year in like the 15th, 16th round. And
we talked about him in depth a couple months ago. Yeah.
He was one of my under the radar picks for this year. And then he was hurt for most of the year. But one of the fascinating things about him is he pitched in that game at Joker Marchant. So we got the Hawkeye data on him, and his fastball and his changeup are almost identical in terms of movement and spin, but they're like 8 miles an hour different. So it'll be really fascinating to see. I would imagine that is incredibly hard to pick up as a hitter. If your fastball and your changeup are moving exactly the same and spinning exactly the same, but are 8 miles an hour different, I can't imagine how you would hit that as a hitter. So,
by the way, Anderson, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it, man. Have a good night.
Yeah. We're almost done here.
Yeah.
I'm waxing on about FCL pitching, but so that was an interesting thing that to pull from the data, and Jerry loves that stuff too. So you were chatting about that a little bit. So
Jerry got really pumped when I gave him the Hawkeye data that I got from my source.
Yes.
On Saturday.
Yeah. I'm curious to see if he can pull out the
he pulled out
data.
He pulled out the Magno data too.
Oh, gotcha. All right. So good. We have Magno from AAA too, but I heard it would be interesting. So
exclusive. Thanks, Harrison. Thank you, Harrison, for the $2.
Off the Prickers building.
You know what's funny? It's spilling over onto Twitter. We're getting requests for the. We're getting requests for this.
Off the Prickers building.
I'm just rolling through here again. We also in that Joker Martin's outing, we got first inning by Rainer Castillo, who was a guy that we were excited about last year, right? One of their higher dollar international pitching signs. He looked, data was solid. We also got Hayden Menden pitching. Danya Evans pitched. So a lot of this year's draft picks and new guys were pitching. That was fun. And I'm trying to look real quick. I'm going to check the batters. And I think Max Clark did not necessarily hit a bunch of stuff this week, but I think he got credit for stuff this week because of the weird how it works with games getting delayed by lightning constantly. I don't know what it is. I think the backfields in Florida are just all lightning rods.
Yeah, they.
It's either
sweaty bathwater hot out there, or it's you get that. When I remember going in February, oh, this is a nice time of year. I'm like, it's hot. And they're like, wait till August. And I remember going last year, because last year I went to Lakeland around August, and that was brutal. That was brutal. So,
yeah, that's a tough
one. Last question for the evening from Tyler Parker.
All right.
And he asks, what do you guys think of Cole Turney? I know he played a small college, but his numbers were insane. Has he seen any playing time in FCL yet?
He has. I'm looking at right now. This week he went 6-for-14 with 2 doubles, a triple, 5 RBIs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, 2 steals. He has a really fascinating story. We talked about it, I think, on the draft show, that he was a top 200 draft prospect back in 2017. So that's 2 years before Riley Green, right, as a high schooler. But he bounced around from multiple schools, Houston. I think he was in Arkansas briefly. It's an intriguing bat. I worry that it's complex league and he's 25, right? Like we wouldn't know anything about him until he gets to Double A. And by that time, he might be 27. But he had the pedigree. I don't know if he has the bat to hit advanced pitching because you haven't seen it, but it's certainly a fun story for a non-drafted guy. And I think he went to the same junior college or Division III school as Mark Connor, Tiger's scouting director. So there's some connections there too. The one guy I wanted to mention just before we go was Brett Callahan, one of their draft picks this year. He's just been tearing it up in the Gulf Coast League, the Florida Complex League. I guess they just don't have room for him elsewhere. But he hit the big 3-run home run in extra innings this week. His numbers are, he's got to have like 1500 OPS. It's just not fair for these college guys to be playing. It's a 1226 OPS. Sorry. Made a nice diving catch. He's playing guys who aren't nearly as good as him. And so it shows. But Max Clark had a down week overall. I think it was 3-for-19, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, 2 steals. McGonigal was 2-for-9. with two walks and one strikeout. Carson Rucker, I mentioned, he did a grand slam for his first career home run. Josue Briseño, 5-for-15 with a home run. Other than that, yeah, nothing that like really stands out like crazy. You know, Samuel Gill went 5-for-10. That's pretty good with five walks. But
it's pretty quiet. Yeah, it was pretty quiet in terms of the FCL this week. But so coming up this week, Toledo's back on the road, I believe. So
Toledo's at Louisville.
Yep. And then Erie comes home for 2 weeks before the playoff.
They got Bowie and Jackson Holiday, unless Jackson Holiday gets called up to the majors, which has been rumored.
Yeah. There's a, by the way, it was funny.
Thank you, Perry.
Out loud. Thank you, Perry, by the way. We appreciate that comment. He said, it's a great show. No one trusts more when they come to the Tigers farm system than these guys. I really appreciate that. Thank you, Perry. And also, thank you to, I had a guy DM me yesterday. Forgive me. I'm trying to remember his name off the top of my head right now, but thank you. It was really kind. Send some kind words about the show. What was I saying? Erie.
The name was Austin.
Austin. Yes. Thank you. Austin. I was thinking about, who's Lakeland plays Clearwater, and Clearwater is chasing them in the standings. So that would be a very good divisional match for them. Erie's at home for 2 weeks. Man, I cannot talk. All my brain is filled with this AA Erie, and
you had a hell of a weekend, man. You drove down in the traffic for whatever reason around Toledo is garbage. I got to your house a little later than I wanted to, and we missed a little bit of the game on Friday just because the traffic was so bad around Toledo, and then you hit it again on the way home today.
What is up with why is this state so stupid when it comes to construction? What the hell? Can you get it right, please? Fix the damn roads, whatever. Just stop. Come on.
Yeah, maybe that is what's happening. I don't think so. I think they've been fixing the roads for 70 years. Right? They fix them, and they're breaking them, they fix them. So you need jobs.
You get charged $9 to go on a damn turnpike, and then you have to wait 30 minutes to get through the turnpike, the exit out of the turnpike. Screw you, Ohio. Seriously, there's not much good about Ohio except for things in Cleveland. That's about it.
What else was I going to say? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, West Michigan's at Peoria. And then they, I think, are at Lansing before they finish the season hosting Great Lakes, right? I'm going to be at a bunch of those Lansing games because it's the closest stadium to my house. And Jesse is fantastic. And a friend of ours. Friend of the show, I would say.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show. Wrestler.
And then other than that, I think we're going to head out to Erie for the playoffs, right? Which is about a month from now.
Yeah. Although Greg said we should head out to Erie before the end next week.
Next week?
Yeah. Because there are certain, we should head out there for, because you want you get on the broadcast. It's only fair that you get on. But
what certain, am I going to add?
Yeah. But look, Ohio as a whole, in all fairness, is a fine state. There's some great people in there. There's some fantastic food.
I thought you were just saying Ohio as a whole.
Oh, no. Like, a lot of people think his armpit is...
With a W.
But no, Ohio's fine. Ohio's fine. But there's... The reason why I mentioned things and people, all that in Cleveland, are... They're fantastic. I don't know. I'm starting to... Honestly, for the most part, it's fine. It is.
Bone Thugs and Harmony are from Cleveland.
Yeah. Exactly. Melt.
That one guy.
Ohio as a whole. Okay.
Who's that stupid rapper was with? He immediately gave up on rap and started dating Megan Fox. What's that idiot's name?
He started doing what?
He's dating Megan Fox.
Oh.
Machine Gun Kelly. But Nine Inch Nails from Cleveland, right?
Trent Reznor's from Cleveland.
Yeah, so.
No, listen. Shout out to, look, there's a lot of great things in, okay? All right. I'm trying to save myself.
Yeah, so I agree.
Yeah.
There are many fine people from Cleveland and Ohio in general.
Yeah.
Everybody who lives. I don't care.
He's called MJ or MGK.
MGK. Yeah.
Does it matter?
It's funny. Here's just a quick aside. Back in my underground hip hop concert going days, I went down to something called Scribble Jam, which was a MC battle, DJ battle, B-boy battle, all that stuff back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And there was a very different Machine Gun Kelly rapping back then in MC battles. and he wasn't any good either. So anyway, I'm just saying, not a terribly original name, MGK.
No. You know, it's cool. There's cool initials. Your initials are cool, CB. I know a lot of people that are CBs that are fantastic people. So it just goes along with that.
There you go. Yeah. I'll tell you a CB joke later today. But
yeah. All right. You can tell the
people. Right. It's time to go.
It's time to go.
Thank you for everybody watching. Thank you for everybody listening.
Thank you for everybody listening. We appreciate it. Shout out to, again, shout out to Greg. Shout out to Sam. Shout out to Christy, who set up the tickets this afternoon for that. Thank you for everything. It's been a great weekend. John Denver Saturday night in Toledo. What? Oh, yeah. I'm going to go to that. John Denver. So on that note, thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. We'll talk to you this week. Don't forget to check out the Sawyer Gibson Long interview we'll be posting this week. Have a good night, everybody. Which reminds me, I have to set up.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At KPMG, our people make the difference. It's not just something we say, it's what we do. Combining the power of people and technology, we uncover brighter insights, innovate bolder solutions, and create better data-driven outcomes. KPMG, make the difference.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.